the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. There's this interesting conversation that occurs between Mutawakkil Abbasi and one of the court judges that was working for him. So, Mutawakkil Abbasi, of course, was one of the Abbasid caliphs. It could be said that his reign was where the peak of the power and strength of the Abbasid caliphs had begun to plateau before it began to fall. Before Mutawakkil Abbasi, of course, there are other famous Abbasid caliphs such as Mansur, Dawaniqi, and Harun al-Rashid, and Ma'mun al-Abbasi. Harun and Ma'mun, can be said, were these caliphs that were at the peak of the power and strength of the Abbasid Caliphate. But here we reach to Mutawakkil. Now, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was a contemporary of the Abbasid Caliph Mutawakkil. So Mutawakkil and one of his court judges, perhaps we should explain this court judges thing. At the time, the Abbasid Caliphs would appoint judges. And this was so that they would have governmental authority and control over the Islamic laws and the jurisprudential and fiqhi aspects of Islam. So he was speaking with one of his judges and they were talking with one another about this idea of jurisprudence and scholars and the Islamic code of law and the Sharia and these things. And so Mutawakkil asked him, you know, who he thought was the foremost and preeminent individual when it came to knowledge and wisdom regarding the jurisprudential aspect of Islam and Islamic laws. And amazingly, and this is a testament to the knowledge and wisdom of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, that even their most bitterest enemies would accept the fact that they were the best. And so this court judge, he said that, you know, I know no one more prominent and more knowledgeable and more wise in the jurisprudential fields of the Islamic laws than Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. And so a very strange testament here by the opponents and the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam themselves, where they are saying that, you know, if we ever have a problem, we refer to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam in the most complicated of questions, and we prefer Imam Hadi's fatwas to the fatwas of other jurisprudents. Truly a testament to the unequaled jurisprudential power of Imam Hadi alayhi salam in the words and conversations of his enemies. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en/call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Focus of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Jamil, 11 years of age. Salma, 16. Jawan, 2. Mohammad, 13. These are the names of just four Palestinian children who have been slaughtered in Gaza since Israel started bombing the besieged territory on October 7. Their names, together with those of other 5,000 deceased Palestinian boys and girls, were placed on makeshift tombstones and displayed in Esquilino Square in the Italian capital to remember all children killed during Israel's ongoing brutal military assault on Gaza. The initiative, dubbed Stop Slaughtering Children in Gaza, was carried out by AOI, an association of NGOs operating in the international solidarity and cooperation sector, representatives of trade unions and other civil society organizations, together with members of Italy's Palestinian community, attended the demonstration.
You cannot be a member of the United Nations, signing accords and voting resolutions that are enforced only if they suit specific interests. This way, the credibility of the institutions is badly damaged.
Palestinian authorities have reported that more than 6,500 miners have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip so far. Earlier this month, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that Gaza was becoming a graveyard for children, with hundreds of girls and boys killed or injured every day. As 1.6 million Gazans have been displaced from their homes, many forced to move to the south of the Strip, there are concerns that a large number of them may end up in refugee camps.
You know the resilience of the Palestinian people. We will not leave our land. This is our land. This is our right. This was very clear from our people in Gaza. They prefer to live, you know, on their destroyed houses rather than to live outside of Gaza.
Some at the demonstration said an increasing number of people in Italy are choosing to stand with the Palestinians despite the mainstream media coverage of the conflict being completely biased in favor of Israel.
I have stopped following the Western media outlets for quite some time. They should be ashamed. We have the right to be informed honestly and truthfully. Give us the truth, and citizens will then choose which side to stand for. I'm disgusted. These media are all complicit in the mass slaughtering of Palestinians.
Hundreds of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held in cities and towns across Italy since the start of the war in Gaza over 8 weeks ago. Pro-Palestine rallies were held in Forlì, Ravenna, Cremona, Asti, Reggio Emilia, Genoa and Piacenza last weekend alone. Max Civili, Rome.
Scholars and thinkers have come together in a meeting at Tehran University to review a 2015 letter sent by Iran's leader to the youth in Europe and the United States. The meeting discussed how the leader's vision is finally being materialized in 2023. In the letter written in January of 2015, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asked young people in the U.S. and Europe to attain first-hand knowledge of Islam. Ayatollah Khamenei asked youngsters not to allow the states to hypocritically introduce their own recruited terrorists as representatives of Islam. He also points out that with the mass development of social media, people can go beyond their geographical borders and try to view different cultures and religions objectively. Such pieces of advice from the leader have once again been brought to attention as the youth around the globe are showing interest in Islam after witnessing the resistance and faith of the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Instead of money and materialistic possessions, the youth in Western nations can grab onto a more soothing and inclusive philosophy by forming affiliations with Islam.
Some other scholars call the leader's letter a fatherly address, aiming to uproot the xenophobia that oppressive states usually spread in a bid to justify their violence towards the people of a certain land or ethnicity.
The fact is that these letters were seeds that was put on the ground for it to grow and to sort of bring liberation and knowledge and awareness and awakening right across the world, especially with the children, with the youngsters, and youngsters in particular, because they are the future. The fact of the matter is that what has happened in the last month and a half since 7th of October reinforced and indeed brought into practice what the letter was trying to achieve. The awakening of people about the fact that Palestinians are the most oppressed and being deliberately massacred in front of our eyes, day in, day out.
Since October 7th, various Western media outlets have tried to justify Israeli crimes in Gaza. Accordingly, they have largely attempted to ignore the vast distress brought upon the 2.3 million people in Gaza in recent weeks. Young people, however, have been taking to the streets in support of Palestine in large numbers after finding out about Israeli atrocities through social media. One of the main goals behind the letter by the leader of the Islamic Revolution to the Western youth was to bypass Western media that do not present facts to their audience, society, as well as young people in Europe and the United States. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Pro-Palestinian protesters filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to praise the success of the Palestinian resistance movement and condemn the Israeli regime. Protesters hailed resistance efforts, which they say delivered a humiliating defeat to the Israeli army. Yemenis said they will continue to fight alongside the Palestinians until victory.
We tell the Zionists and the Americans that the Yemeni people, who just came out of an 8-year battle and a strangling blockade, that we have put all this aside and are stepping forward to stand with our Palestinian brothers and the Palestinian cause, because it is our main cause. We tell the Palestinians, you are not alone.
The demonstration also praised the Yemeni army's resilience in taking meaningful military actions, which pressured the Israeli regime to accept a ceasefire. Yemeni operations consisted of launching a series of drone and ballistic missiles to occupied Palestine, and the latest capture of the Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea.
We will close Bab al-Mandeb and we will seize the Israeli and American ships until they stop the aggression on our Palestinian brothers and the resistance in Gaza. We will strike with missiles and the drones. Our missiles will even target the Zionists inside Gaza so that we can abolish the Israeli entity.
We are here to support our armed forces and the naval and air force and all of their military efforts, including the striking of a U.S. spy drone. We also praise the latest operation, which captured an Israeli ship in the Red Sea. This was a huge blow to the Zionists.
Despite the announcement of a ceasefire agreement in Palestine, the Yemeni army says it will continue its monitoring of the Red Sea to prevent or capture any ships linked to the Israeli regime. The Palestinian resistance has praised the Yemeni army's stance in supporting Palestinians and for taking decisive military actions against the Israeli regime. The Yemeni armed forces spokesperson has also reiterated that attacks against the Israeli entity will continue until the genocide ends. Yusuf Baudi, Sana'a.
In a remarkable display of unity and solidarity, the Palestine Freedom March took place in the heart of Lahore, just a few miles from the U.S. consulate. The proximity of the march to the U.S. consulate added significance to it. as the rally sought to convey message not only to the international community, but specifically to the United States, a key supporter of Israel in the war on Gaza.
Israel ek fascist.
The whole world now understands that Israel is a fascist regime that has occupied Palestinian territories. Israel sheds the blood of Palestinians to continue its existence in the world. The Israeli policy of oppression has been defeated now. These worldwide protests indicate that the concept of peace has won and the narrative of oppressors has been defeated.
The convergence of the people from different backgrounds symbolized a shared commitment to the Palestinian cause, underscoring the gravity of the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip.
People around the world, including Pakistanis, are on the streets and condemning the U.S. and its illegitimate child Israel for their actions in Gaza. Due to increasing public resentment, the U.S. and Israel are under tremendous public pressure, and the real face of the Zionist regime has been exposed in the international community. No oppressor can resist this public pressure anymore.
The event not only highlighted the immediate concern for Gaza, but also exemplified the broader call for justice and peace in the region.
The Palestine issue is a matter of honor for the Muslim community now. The events of Karbala are being repeated in Gaza. They are killing men, women, and children, considering Palestinians to be alone. But Israel and the U.S. should not forget that they are not alone. The whole of humanity stands with the people of Palestine.
United in their demand for peace and justice, the participants of Palestine Freedom March fervently called for a lasting ceasefire in Gaza.
The ongoing protest rallies, boycott of pro-Israeli products, and systematic fundraising initiatives are the examples of how deeply the Pakistani society is committed to helping Palestinian people who are confronting Israeli aggression in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Lahore.
A group of Italian journalists, representatives of media unions and organizations, gathered at the Roman Press Association in Rome to discuss how the ongoing conflict in the Gaza Strip has been biasedly covered by the media so far. The initiative was organized by the No Gag Network, a group that advocates for freedom of expression in Italy, as Palestinian and international journalists trapped in the coastal territory continue to be slaughtered by the Israeli occupation forces.
As of today, we don't know if these journalists have been executed or they have been killed in their homes together with their beloved ones during the Israeli bombardments. And I ask you, would that make any difference? It is horrific anyway.
During the meeting, journalists agreed that a war needs field reporting, condemning Israel's refusal to heed calls to allow independent reporters to access Gaza for direct testimony. Since October 9, the 2.3 million residents of Gaza have been experiencing a devastating near-complete communications blackout.
Killing a journalist is a war crime, and we call on the International Criminal Court to proceed with the examination into what's happening in Gaza.
The Italian journalists also relaunched a petition already signed by 200 French, Palestinian and Lebanese journalists demanding access to Gaza and the protection of journalists covering the Israeli onslaught on the Strip.
Freedom of expression has been buried under Gaza's rubble. Only journalists embedded with the IOF are in Gaza, operating under the observation of Israeli commanders in the field.
Speaking of freedom of expression, the future of journalism in Italy looks bleak. There has been a big question mark over the credibility of Italian media outlets in recent years, as the sharp divide between the mainstream media and a large chunk of public opinion has been growing deeper.
The divide is getting deeper and deeper. Much of the public opinion does not follow mainstream TVs and newspapers anymore. They have totally lost trust in them. And it is understandable. The media keeps saying the conflict in Gaza started on October 7.
Meanwhile, Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani has urged Israel to use the four-day ceasefire in Gaza to carefully consider what the international perception is of its offensive against the Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
The freed Palestinian prisoners and their families here in the occupied territories were filled with mixed emotions as 39 released women and minors found relief from the brutality of Israeli jails as part of a prisoner exchange agreement with Hamas. 39 is not just a number, as each of the freed Palestinians has a different story to tell after languishing for months in Israeli jails where thousands of Palestinian freedom fighters are still being held.
Inshallah, all the prisoners will be released. We have faith in Allah and the resistance. We didn't have a radio or television to know what was going on outside the prisons. We knew about the ceasefire and the deal when Israeli jailers raided our cells and started to bring out prisoners. They grabbed us by our clothes and dragged us away from the cells.
The moment we knew that the resistance had detained Israelis, I called my mom on that day. And she told me that resistance fighters had detained Israelis and that they were shelling the settlements. All female inmates started to scream for joy. Then the soldiers broke into our cells and attacked and beat us. And since then, the majority of us had been held in solitary confinement and all of our belongings had been seized. We do not have enough food or water. And we were literally being mistreated. When we were informed that there was a swap deal, we were happy but sad at the same time because of the martyrs in Gaza. We are proud of Gaza and the resistance, and may God bless the martyrs.
13 Israeli captives were released by Hamas as part of the swap deal. Israel has agreed to release 150 Palestinian women and children prisoners in exchange for Hamas releasing 50 of the women and children taken captive during the Al-Aqsa Flood operation on the 7th of October. The prisoner exchange takes place during the four-day truce in the Gaza Strip, and that's why this relief is mixed with sadness as Palestinians fear the resumption of Israeli hostilities in Gaza after the ceasefire expires. The swap deal, however, is not the end of the story, as families of other prisoners hope all their loved ones will be freed soon.
What Hamas did, she make it this time with force. Even we lost a lot of blood. My people, I passed away. They killed hospitals, they killed people, they killed everywhere. But we still believe that this is our right and we'll take our freedom, whatever will happen. We will give this and we will give more years. Kamal Nail for him is 44 years in prison. His age now is 66. And we have Kamal Suher Burkhouti, she's in prison too, which is her age for 64. We believe this is the first step and inshallah we hope with the people, with their strongest, which they are, we will have the next step, which is liberate of all Palestine.
Before October 7, there were about 5,200 Palestinians in Israeli jails. However, in the last few weeks, the number of Palestinian inmates skyrocketed as another 3,000 were detained. The release of those Palestinian prisoners from Israeli jails gives a glimmer of hope for thousands of detainees and their families that the resistance will keep its promise to release all prisoners. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
A peaceful march for peace. As the bombs temporarily stop falling from the sky above Gaza, hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestine demonstrators of all faiths are back to the streets of the British capital, many traveling from other parts of the UK, united in their demands.
We need to ceasefire, we need to end the siege in Gaza, we need to end the occupation and free Palestine.
A long-term solution is an immediate ceasefire, longer-term ceasefire. It is an end to the system of apartheid. It is an end to the occupation. It is an end to the oppression and systematic oppression that has been going on for the last 75 years.
Demands is obviously that Israel stops this genocide, that they allow the people to go back to their homes in Gaza, that they stop pushing them out towards the deserts. And
more than 1,500 police officers were on duty, distributing leaflets warning demonstrators against the use of, quote, racist abuse and promoting terrorism, raising questions about proportionality.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on the police being put on them by the government to put a stamp down on these protests. You know, these protests are accused of being anti-Semitic, but really, these are just ordinary workers who can understand what's happening, who can see through the establishment lies, the propaganda.
What they're also demanding is that the UK government stop arming the Israeli regime and withdraw its diplomatic cover for it.
Western governments have suffered major reputational damage for their continued support for the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. And the people here are highlighting Western double standards with regard to the protection of civilians in different conflicts.
Well, we see it all over. When it was the Ukrainian issue, you know, the flags were out, everyone's talking about it. Right now, it's silence across every political spectrum. Labour, nothing. Conservative, nothing. You know, and their parties that we're not going to be voting for. So, yes, we need to basically, you know, this has to be the forefront of all political activity.
The four-day truce offers some hope to these demonstrators that it might mean the beginning of the end and a breath of fresh air to more than 2 million Gazans left with few options for survival. This is the seventh protest of the kind in as many weeks, and the organizers say as long as the killing continues, so will they. Saipur is up, London.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsetodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsetodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The United States has been a steadfast supporter of the Israeli regime for decades, both diplomatically and militarily. Each year, the United States provides around $4 billion of military support to Israel. And since war broke out between the Israeli regime and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, the United States has sent an additional $14 billion in military aid to Israel. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Intercept has covered this story and tells us more. According to an American report, U.S. President Joe Biden has requested the removal of nearly every restriction on Israel's use of stockpiles of weaponry and ammunition stored by the United States in the occupied Palestinian lands. The American non-profit news organization said on Saturday, 25th of November, that President Biden is seeking to remove all restrictions on the use of little-known U.S. weapons stockpiles in the occupied Palestinian territories that the Pentagon established for use in regional conflicts, to which the Israeli regime had been previously permitted to have access in limited circumstances. According to the report, the move was included in the White House's supplemental budget request sent to the U.S. Senate on 20th of October. The proposed budget says this request would allow the transfer of all categories of defense articles. The War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel was created in the 1980s to supply the United States with equipment in the case of a regional war in the Middle East, which is the largest node in a network of de facto U.S. foreign arms stockpiles. These warehouses are controlled by a set of strict requirements. Under the conditions outlined in these requirements, the Israeli regime has been able to tap into these stockpiles and purchase weaponry at low cost if effective subsidization of U.S. military aid is used. The report notes that with the War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel, President Biden seeks to remove nearly all meaningful restrictions on the stockpile and arms transfer in occupied Palestinian territories, with plans to lift restrictions on obsolete or surplus weapons, waive an annual spending cap on replenishing the stockpile, remove weapon-specific restrictions, and curtail congressional oversight over the matter. All the changes in the Biden budget plan would be permanent, except for lifting of the spending cap, which is limited to the 2024 fiscal year. The changes would come in an arms trade relationship that is already shrouded in secrecy. The House of Representatives has already passed legislation reflecting the White House's request recently, and it now stands before the U.S. Senate. Josh Paul, who was the Director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs for over 11 years, said, by dropping the requirement that such articles be declared excess, it would also increase the existing strain on U.S. military readiness in order to provide more arms to Israel. Josh Paul, whose recent resignation due to U.S. military aid to Israel caused a stir in Washington, admitted that President Biden's emergency supplemental funding request would essentially create a free-flowing pipeline to provide any defense articles to the Israeli regime by the simple act of placing them in the War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel stockpile or other stockpiles intended for the Israeli regime. According to experts, the White House request would make it much harder for Congress or the public to monitor U.S. arms transfers to Israel. Under U.S. law, there must be 30 days prior notice to Congress before arms transfer, but the Biden administration budget request would allow this to be shortened in extraordinary circumstances. The English website of the Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. A former senior U.S. State Department staffer has admitted that domestic policy concerns are leading U.S. officials willfully to ignore Israeli war crimes and to suppress the opposition to arming the Israeli regime. Josh Paul, who was the Director of Congressional and Public Affairs for the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs for over 11 years, recently said that many officials are disturbed by the actions of the Israeli military, but they turn a blind eye to rules governing arms transfers to Israel. Josh Paul told Agence France-Presse, in my opinion, Israel is committing war crimes in its actions in Gaza right now, and it's not just my opinion. I've actually heard from officials across government, including elected officials at a very senior level, who share that opinion but aren't willing to say it in public. Josh Paul, whose recent resignation caused a stir in Washington, admitted that criticism of Israel is often seen as a third rail in American politics, particularly in Congress, and this is a deterrent to U.S. officials to come out and say in public what they believe in private. He said the rules restricting arms transfer are weak, which leaves space for policymakers in a willful manner to simply not decide whether the Israeli regime's military has violated human rights in Gaza. The former official added that the United States keeps supplying weapons where it was clear, and as we have seen, that they are going to be used to kill so many Palestinian civilians. Josh Paul resigned on 18th of October due to a policy disagreement concerning the United States' continued lethal assistance to the Israeli regime. He said back then in a post that, "I cannot work in support of a set of major policy decisions, including rushing more arms to one side of the conflict, that I believe to be short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse." Josh Paul's interview came as the Biden administration has been unequivocally backing Israel since the regime waged a brutal war on Gaza Strip on 7th of October. The United States has been a steadfast supporter of the Israeli regime for decades, both diplomatically and militarily. Each year, the United States provides around $4 billion of military support to the Israeli regime, and since war broke out between Israel and the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, the United States has actually sent an additional $14 billion in military aid to Israel. On Saturday, 25th of November, in a telephone call with Israeli War Minister Yoav Gallant, the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin underscored the United States' unwavering support for Israel and received updates as a temporary ceasefire continues across the besieged Gaza Strip following nearly 7 weeks of warfare. A report published by Bloomberg News Agency recently stated that the Pentagon has secretly increased its military aid to Israel, including more sophisticated missiles and equipment, by delivering more laser-guided missiles to the Israeli regime's Apache gunship helicopter fleet, as well as bunker-busting munitions, 155mm shells, night vision equipment, and new army vehicles. The report by Bloomberg News Agency said, for example, as of late October, all 36,000 rounds of 30mm cannon ammunition, 1,800 of the requested M141 bunker-buster munitions, and at least 3,500 night-vision devices were delivered to Israel. Citing an internal Defense Department list, Bloomberg said the arms are already being shipped, or the Defense Department is working to make them available from stockpiles in the United States and Europe. The Pentagon has so far declined to comment on the report, but it said in a statement that it was leveraging several avenues, from internal stocks to U.S. industry channels, to ensure that the Israeli regime has the means to continue its attack on Gaza. The Pentagon statement said the assistance would be provided on a near-daily basis, and that the United States was rapidly supplying Israel with precision-guided munitions, small-diameter bombs, 155mm artillery shells, and other munitions in addition to Iron Dome interceptors and medical support equipment. In a recent letter, more than 30 relief organizations wrote to Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin to dissuade him from sending the Israeli regime the 155mm shells over the extent of their collateral damage. The organization said, in Gaza, one of the world's most densely populated places, 155mm artillery shells are inherently indiscriminate. These munitions are unguided and have a high error radius, as they often land 25 meters away from their intended target.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi one.
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see.
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an introduction into the thoughts, religious and scholarly life of the most outstanding Shiite dignitaries and personalities. And in the new series, we are mainly concerned with outstanding women in Islam, especially the Shiite Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai are the two special guest speakers from the Islamic Hawza Afghan. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Rouhani. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
All right, for today's discussion, we want to talk about another outstanding lady of Islam, the wife of Imam al-Raza alayhi salam and the mother of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Her name is Sabika, Sabika Nubia or Khayzuran. These are different names, but she is mainly known as Sabika. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, another lady which seems to be not originally from Arab Peninsula and still the mother of an imam and the wife of another imam. Give us some information about the early life and biography of this lady.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Sabika, who is also called by the other names like Durra, Rayhana, Sukaina. So these are also some other names attributed to this great lady. Mm-hmm. Yes, she was a servant, but at the same time, she was mother of Imam al-Jawad and wife of Imam Rida alayhi salatu wassalam from the offspring of Mariya Qibtiyya.
And who was she? Mariya Qibtiyya?
Of course, Mariya Qibtiyya was one of the wives of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. She was also a servant. Mm-hmm. And of course, some of these names were chosen by the, for this lady by the holy imams, by Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam. The name Khayzuran,
yes,
was given to this lady. And that's why Shaykh Saduq radwanullah ta'ala alayhi mentioned her name as Khayzuran as well.
Right.
Of course, Umm al-Hasan was the kunya of yes. this lady, salamullahi alayha. And of course, these are the main points that we can mention regarding the early life of mm-hmm. this lady. Of course, she was from Egypt.
Yes.
A village in Egypt.
Qibti means from Qibti, Egypt,
yes.
isn't it? That's
yeah,
right.
Egyptian,
okay.
yes.
Yes.
And of course, some of people consider him as Mirisi or Mirusi, mm-hmm. which is an, a city in Morocco.
Or Morsi or Morocco,
yeah,
yes.
Moroccan,
right.
yes.
Yes, yes.
And that's why, yes, she was said that either to be from Egypt or Morocco, but of course she was African and from Africa, and there is no doubt about her.
That's all right. Again, Sheikh Fadai, we can see the marriage of an holy imam and the mother of another imam to a lady from far, far lands. We can say from African continent. What do you think the main reason was?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As you can see, like some other mothers of imams, here Lady Sabika, the wife of Imam Rizal, mother of Imam Jamal, again is was a servant and was from other country and from other language. See, three differences. Other language, other country, and other religion. When mm-hmm. we say servant, it means that she was not Muslim. She was transferred maybe from some wars mm-hmm. to the Arabian Peninsula. And then in Medina, an imam bought her as a servant. But in Islam, we don't have the ordinary servant slavery, which was common at that time. Slavery in Islam is a school, is education process. Yeah. So Imam Reza educated her and made her qualified to be one of the members of Ahlul Bayt. So after being in this house, She was a real Muslim and a Mormon one, a virtuous one, which could give birth to someone like Imam Javad.
Uh-huh.
And her history is not important.
Yes.
This is a lesson that we can take. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we look at people just by their history.
Yes.
If we are real Muslim, we should be able to change people's history. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yes.
Maybe someone did a lot of sins in his history or her history.
Yes.
But is it necessary that this process continues up to his death? Of course not. People can change. Not only we do not want to change people and educate people as Imam Reza did, mm-hmm. we do not want to tolerate people mm-hmm. because of their history. Mm-hmm. Maybe people made a lot of mistakes in their history.
Yes.
But can we be sure mm-hmm. that he's the same one, mm-hmm. she's the same one? We should look at her or his status at the present time.
Yes.
Whether she or he is a good one, a virtuous one or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the Islam, in the early age of Islam, we have a lot of companions for Prophet's companion, like yes. I don't know, Salman, Miqdad, Abu Zar.
Yes.
So we never pay attention to this point that all of them were not Muslim. Mm. Maybe some of them were idolaters.
Yes.
You know, some of the best companions of prophets mm-hmm. were idolaters.
But even Bilal was from Habasha, Abyssinia, yes. we can say. But he was welcomed. He was chosen as the best muazzin yes. for Prophet Muhammad. Okay.
I want to focus on this change.
Mm-hmm.
We should do our best to change people, okay. and we should accept people's change.
That's right.
We shouldn't focus on people's history. Mm-hmm. We should consider that now, whether he is good or she is good one or bad one. When she's good now, qualified, yes. Imam Reza can choose him That's as right. his wife.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah.
And the story of the birth of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam from Imam al-Reza alayhi salam, you know, as you said, Sheikh Rouhani, one of the programs, the aristocrats of the, we can say, Abbasids very much believed, for example, in being of the pure blood or the noble blood of the Arabs or something like that. So when Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam is born from this lady with a dark complexion, because the mother is originally from there, so they accuse Imam al-Reza alayhi salam that Imam al-Jawad might not be your son. And now the signs of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the power of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is as the same. Can you explain this a little bit for us?
Yes, of course, since, as you rightly mentioned, since the appearance of the Imam al-Jawad alayhi salatu wassalam was like the Africans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why some of the people sometimes casted doubt on this point that whether he is the real son of Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wassalam or he is like adopted son, for example, by Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wassalam.
Mm-hmm.
So Imam Reza alayhi salam himself did understand clearly that he was the son of Imam, and Imam also knew, and the mother of Imam also knew. But there were some people mm-hmm. who sometimes spread some kind of rumors
yeah, that's right.
about this Imam. Then they, Imam Reza alayhi salam, in order to convince them that he is the son of Imam Reza alayhi salam, the real son of Imam Reza, he brought a genealogist, or what you can say, the expert of lineage or
family descent. Family descent.
Yeah,
lineage,
yeah, that's right. It. And then when he came and he saw the Imam al-Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam, he said, no, he is the son of Imam Ridha alayhi salatu mm-hmm. wasalam, and there's no doubt about this son. But one point that we can mention about the Sabika
yes.
alayhi salam is this, that Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wasalam, in one of his riwayat, say that the Sabika, in terms of purity
mm-hmm.
and sacredness, is like Lady Maryam salamullahi alayha. He draw a kind of similarity between this lady and Imam Rida alayha salam, and Lady Maryam salamullahi alayha, said that this lady was actually born pure and mutahhar. This is what Imam Rida alayhi salam says about Sabika. And there is also a riwayah narrated from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, said that my father be fada, or what you can say, sacrificed,
yes.
For the best son or the best child who will be born from a servant. This servant is from Nuba, referring to this lady.
Yes.
And this servant is mutahhar, pure and purified.
Wow.
This is a narration from the Holy Prophet, salawatullah alayhi wa sallam, as we earlier said that she was among the offspring and the children of Maria Qibtiyah, one of the wives of the Holy Prophet, salawatullah alayhi wa sallam.
But beside Hazrat Khadija, Maria Qibtiyah was the only wife of Prophet Muhammad, who bare child to Prophet Muhammad, Ibrahim, the deceased son of Prophet Muhammad, you know.
Yes, of course.
Was one of them, that's right.
So, of course, in these two riwayah, one of is from Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam, the other one is from the Holy Prophet, salatullah alayhi wa sallam. In both of these narrations, this very, very highest, we can say, status and position of this lady is mentioned, that she is purified. And she was born purified. This is very nice. That is in riwayah of the Holy Prophet about this lady.
Some people might accuse the Shiite world that these are stories, these are dreams. How is it possible, for example, that Prophet Muhammad selected a wife for the next generation of the Imams, okay? But I think the authentic answer is that this is not something like ordinary life of the people. Even the selection of the wives and the mothers of the Imams and the pregnancy of these ladies were ordered and pre-planned by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Isn't it, Shaykh?
You know, this kind of knowledge is not a usual one.
Yes.
We call it, in Islamic study, we call it ilm al-ladunni.
Ladun
means from the knowledge of God. Min ladun alimin hakim.
Very good.
So this knowledge came from the knowledge of God. As we know that all monotheistic religions believe that the knowledge of God cover everything from the beginning up to the end.
Yes.
So when Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is connected to the knowledge of God, we cannot accuse him of saying a story. So as God knows everything, she knows everything, by, of course, by the permission of God. But I think, you know, for the lives of imams, their mothers, fathers, you know, these are not the point that should be focused on. This is the basis of our religion, that they have this special knowledge. It's better to take some useful and beneficial lessons from their life. And I can mention one of them, one of the covered aspects of the life of imams and some ladies like Lady Sabika. You know, as you said, the imams were accused. So when Imam Rida accepted that this one, this lady, is a mu'min one, virtuous one, qualified one to get married with, so he was not ashamed of this job, to get married with the mu'min one. And Imam Javad was not ashamed as his mother, which was a servant.
Or a, you know, colored one.
A colored one.
That's,
you know,
right.
In Quran, we have in the introduction of mu'mins, believers, real one, we have إِنَّ الَّذِينَ قَالُوا رَبُّنَ اللَّهِ ثُمَّ اسْتَقَامُوا. Sometimes we start to be in a religion, we claim that we believe in God in that religion, but we do not continue. How? One of the reasons is that shame. For example, if I say prayer all the time, but now I go to a party, or I go to a ceremony, and now I'm ashamed of my religion, I do not say prayer. Or, for example, my father is from a low class of society.
Okay.
Or my mother does not have a special education.
It's an embarrassment.
I shouldn't be ashamed of my mother or my father.
Yes.
As we see nowadays, when people want to get married, even if they are sure that this girl is a very good one, by they look at the father and mother, not their iman, but the position of societies, if their social position is not good in the material aspect, mm-hmm. they do not get married to that girl. Uh-huh. Why? Just because of the wealth, because of the color?
Yes.
Why is it like that? You know, one of the servant workers of Imam Reza, Holy Shrine, said a story that when we want to clean the zarih of Imam Reza, usually we find some letters mm-hmm. among the monies. We find some letter. We got a letter.
Yes.
It was written. It was by daughter of a sweeper.
Uh-huh.
She wrote to Imam Reza that, I want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who want to get married with me. But after they understand and realize that my father is a sweeper, they get back. So what is my sin? Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't I get married just because of the job of my father? You know, is it like the lifestyle of Ahlul Bayt that we see in Sabiqa's life?
Yes,
we shouldn't be ashamed of haq. What is the criteria to be a wife, to have a father, a good one? When I have a good father and mother, I should be proud of them.
Yes.
So that is the Islamic lifestyle.
That's all right. And truly, all the aspects of the life of the infallible imams and their seerah and conduct is a lesson for the people, as you said, for today's world too. It was very kind of you, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani. Thank you very much for a nice elaboration regarding the life account of Sabiqa Nubiya, the wife of Imam Reza alayhi salam and mother of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. And thank you very much to listeners for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you. Fiamma.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader says Yalas, a flood operation by the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli regime, disturbed the U.S. policies in the region. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas delivers more Israeli captives to the Red Cross in a prisoner swap deal with Israel as part of an extended temporary truce in Gaza. The Israeli military storms a refugee camp in the city of Jenin amid escalating tensions across the occupied West Bank. Hello and welcome, everybody. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution.